Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we have with us on the show Julie Boyer. Julie helps women who are stuck in the wrong job create soul-fulfilling careers so that they can make a difference by doing what comes naturally to them. A highly trained and experienced coach, Julie helps women set down old patterns that have kept them stuck and exhausted for years and expand into their natural strengths, confidence, passion, and purpose. She believes work isn't just a paycheck. It's something that can lift us to new heights of happiness and meaning in our lives, if we take the right approach. Julie is a certified professional co-active coach, CTI trained leader, and lucid living great story coach. She's also the author of the book, Just Give Me Meaningful Work, Escape Your Exhausting Job and Start Making a Difference, which is a guide for getting unstuck and finding work you love. Julie offers grounded insight into how to realize a vision when there are many unknowns and owes this to her years of experience as an artist. She holds a Master of Fine Arts from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Through her Jumpstart to Loving Your Job Again program, she's coached lawyers, consultants, coaches, business owners, teachers, project managers, and more. She frequently holds events in the Boston area where she lives with her Labradoodle, Zoe. Thanks so much for joining us today, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and before we get started, a special little thanks to our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible. The folks over at Markham Search LLC offer premier recruiting services throughout the United States. So please do keep that in mind for all of your recruiting needs. So Julie, tell us a little bit about your story. How was it that this became such a passion of yours?
Sure. Well, I'll start with a snapshot of now because I like starting from my happy place. And I'll say that the work that I have now is just like what I always dreamed of. It's fulfilling on a lot of different levels. I'm personally invested in what I do. Like, my heart is invested. I love my clients. I love the people that I talk to for my work. And it's deeply fulfilling. And it also challenges me in all of the ways that I love to be challenged, or it causes me to grow in the ways that I want to grow. So there's this alignment that's really nice. And this is part of what I think is possible for people, this having a job that can lift you to new heights of happiness and fulfillment. But this was not always the case. So I struggled for a long time, like decades, like almost a couple decades, trying to find my place in the professional world. My background is in art, fine art. I grew up considering myself an artist. And in the professional world, it was hard to find a place, because really I wanted to be an artist and I didn't want to have to deal with the money-making aspect of it. So I always had jobs that would allow me to kind of squeak by. And so for a while I was coaching PE at an all-girls school, for example, or I was teaching PE and I was coaching sports. And I loved the school. I liked many aspects of the job, but I kind of felt like a fraud in that I knew I wasn't committed to this path. I knew I wasn't going to go to school to further my training in PE. I knew that there was something more for me. And I had this nagging sense, and it's not like I knew, it's not like I could tell exactly what that sense was telling me. I just had the sense that there was something more, which I think a lot of people feel. And so I had this for a while, and I decided I would go back to art school and I would get my master's degree. So I did that. And I really thought that that would solve my problem, that after that, I would land myself a job that I liked. I would become professional. I would be, I would take this thing seriously and I would be happy. And what happened was I exhausted myself emotionally and physically during graduate school. There were awesome aspects of it, but I did come out of it, needing some kind of rest and healing. And on top of that, I just felt more lost than when I went in. And that was super discouraging. So around that time, that was sort of like, what is happening? And I spent a lot of time volunteering. I thought if I would just kind of keep giving that I would eventually get back, that some clarity would come to me. And I also did some part-time, went back to part-time coaching. And then, so I was getting more and more exhausted. And at that point, I was having migraines and back troubles and adrenal issues. So really, like, I had done a number on my body. And I was in a relationship. And when I started to have this relationship crisis, that's when I really, it's like I was at a crossroads. And I really had to decide, like, am I going to really try to get what I want? Am I going to try to go, like, create something that I really want in life? And if so, how do I do that? Or am I going to just decide, kind of resign myself to this, to say, like, well, I'm just not meant to be happy in my work life, and I'll just sort of stay here. And so around that time, I was doing a lot of soul searching, and I was having coffee in a park, a nearby park. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and there were azaleas. And I was kind of taking in the beauty, and I had this moment that was, it was like a moment of clarity and a moment of inner knowing. It's almost like I had a voice inside me. It's almost like I heard the words, you are okay. You're going to be okay. And you always were okay. So just this sense of, you know, I was filled with anxiety and angst, and having this moment of this inner knowing where, like, not only would everything be okay, but everything always has been, like, I've always been okay, was like a healing moment. And so, and it was kind of spiritual. It sounds spiritual. It kind of was. And some more things kind of kept happening like that. And then during that time, I picked up a book on leadership coaching. And when I read this book, it was like I came to life. It was like somebody turned on the lights inside me. And like, I had such a visceral sense of like, oh my God, this is me. This is all the questions in this book are questions that I want to be answering. I want to be asking myself. I want to be asking others. The subject matter was like a mirror of my inner world. Wow. And you know, before that, I didn't know really what coaching was. So it was completely eye-opening. So because I had such a visceral inner yes, and it was such a feeling of relief to have that clarity, and I felt like passion, right? Like I was kind of lit up with enthusiasm and hope. I decided that was my path, that I was going to get myself there. And I had a business as a professional organizer at the time, organizing people's stuff and also their emotions. And I got myself into a coaching program for organizers. And that was the start of my coaching journey. And then it wasn't long after that that I got into life coaching with CTI, and then, you know, got certified and did their leadership program. And then now I'm at the tail end of a 2-year mastery program with Lucid Living, doing some healing work, learning healing frameworks to do with clients. And so that's how I got here. It wasn't easy. And it definitely had some, you know, there were moments of, I don't know, intervention. There were some moments that were kind of lucky, but I seized them. You know, there were openings of clarity, and I said yes to them. So, and now I just feel like I don't want anybody to give up on their dream. Like, even if they're not clear about what their dream is, I don't want anybody to stay in that misery, because it's fixable. It's completely changeable.
I completely agree. I was talking to a gentleman today who's considering leaving his job, and it's so unfortunate. There are a lot of people I know where they'll leave a job if they like their boss, they like the work they're doing, and they like the company. No matter what, I tell them 100 out of 100 times they should stay in their job. But this particular individual is underpaid. And he's like, oh gosh, you know, well, if I could just make, you know, market, which is 20,000 more. And I get it. That is a big chunk of change. But the problem is, so many of us sell our happiness for an extra dollar or an extra $1,000 here or there. And so for me, I think that's one of the mistakes that I see a lot of job seekers make, is that people will leave a job that they love for what they think is a better, shinier, newer job that they think will bring them more money or more satisfaction or more growth. And then they regret having left that first good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at the motivation behind that, it's a different motivation than it would be if you chose to stay in a job that brought you fulfillment. You know, what is the motive when you're looking for more money? What is the motivation behind it? Is it truly because you're valuing a certain lifestyle and that brings you joy? Or is it because you think it's not enough and you haven't really investigated that opinion that you have. You know, you haven't really checked that out with your inner self.
Absolutely. So what are your thoughts? I mean, what do you think the biggest mistake people make is when they're going after their dreams?
So what I see, one of the biggest mistakes that I see is that people will have a dream that feels a little far off or far-fetched, and they'll give up on it way too early. So that's like the simplest thing that people do. And what happens is when you have something that you're there, it starts with a hunger or a longing or a vision or a sense or just a seed of an idea. And that longing is real. Like, it definitely is real, and it will grow into something if you nurture it and feed it. But in the early stages, it's going to be super awkward. And your brain is, because you're in the unknown and you don't have answers to all your questions immediately, your brain's going to make up stuff that isn't true just to shut the whole thing down. So this is like the fear-based part of your brain, which I call like saboteurs or your negative ego. And it's funny because I will be talking with a client and, you know, they will start sort of pitching an argument against the possibility of them getting what they want. And they're so convinced by it. But when we really unpack it and we like slow down and really look at like, what are the facts? Like, how much money do you need to live? How much money are you asking for? Like, what are the possibilities out there? Or what, you know, whatever the topic that we're dealing with, when you really unpack it and look at it, you can get out of that fear brain and slow down and see things a lot more clearly. So you really want to, in the early stages of trying to go for something, when you're still developing clarity on what you want, the kind of change that you want, especially if the change that you want is kind of like a life change, like you're doing it because you want to be more happy or more fulfilled. It's not just about the job. You want to doubt your doubt in the beginning. You want to be aware that your brain's going to make stuff up so that you can catch it and slow it down and say no to it.
So how does one begin to do that? Because I know for myself personally, and a lot of the job seekers I've had the pleasure of working with throughout the years, a lot of us, we hear that voice, but how do you differentiate between, like you said, that inner voice where you thought you heard, oh gosh, it's all going to be okay, versus that voice that's saying, screw these people, you need to leave today, they all suck. How do you differentiate between those two voices?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my rule of thumb is that you identify the feeling in your body. So I'll kind of train people to tell the difference between how it feels when they are, you know, when they're on a rant where they're blaming somebody else and they're filled with anger and they've got that motivation happening. Like, how does it feel to be there? What's the impact on you? Right. And then you ask yourself, like, is that the feeling that I want to be creating for myself? Is that the feeling that I want to be making decisions out of? And when when you're imagining something, a possibility, and you can feel that you are lighting up, and somebody can even see it on your face, you know, or hear it in your voice, like your voice just totally changed, you know, like we all have this experience of seeing somebody just captured by their passion or something that makes them feel joy or love. And that, it's like our body changes and our emotions change and physically we feel different. Like our tension might release from our shoulders or we might feel a sense of calm or peace. Like that moment in the park, I just felt complete peace. When you feel those kinds of feelings and emotions, that's a really good sign that you're on the right track. It's vulnerable and it's real, which makes it really scary. But that doesn't mean that you're on the wrong track, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to a group of people the other day about this, about perspective and how we have like this reactive nature. And I think the biggest thing that I would say I've noticed throughout the years between choices that are ego-based versus perhaps spirit or soul or higher self-based is that if you give yourself the time space to pause, because anything that you do in the heat of the moment without first giving it even a moment's thought is 9 times out of 10 probably going to be ego-based. But anything that you even give yourself a moment or a minute or a day to consider, chances are you've actually asked your higher self and given yourself the time space to consider, is this in my highest and best good, rather than just reacting to the here and now and what feels good or what you think you want.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And you just perfectly summarized something that's so important that I think could be like the takeaway for your listeners today, is that like that process of slowing down opens up space for you to learn so much, you know, about why this might be a good idea or a bad idea, right? But to like really make a decision from a measured, grounded place.
Yeah,
I love it.
Absolutely. And we all have space. I mean, we all have space and we can argue like when somebody's upset, it's because our stuff that's in our space gets all over somebody else. You're like verbally vomiting on somebody else. But if we can regularly like take care of ourselves and take care of our own space and nurture ourselves, because what happens is in personal and professional relationships, we expect somebody outside of ourselves to clean our house. We're basically going to you and saying, hey, come be my house cleaner. Come clean up my house. Clean up all this mess I have in here. And I'll never forget Andre, who's my security guard downstairs in my building, said the most brilliant thing to me one day. He said, Jen, before you interact with anybody else, you have to first clean the boxes out of your own attic. He said, nobody can clean that those boxes for you. It's up to you, but that's your space. Your attic is your space. Your rooms are your space, but it's not just the space that we live in physically, but it's also the space we carry around with us that we often let it get so overflowing with stuff and we don't clean it out. And then we can't figure out why we're dumping on everybody around us.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what you're talking about is the route to empowerment, like real empowerment, like freedom, actually, because what you're talking about is taking responsibility. So like, not only are we vomiting on somebody else, but internally we're vomiting on ourselves. Like something is creating enough intention that usually like the origin of it is us. And
exactly.
That's probably like another, like it would take another whole like radio hour to go into that, all the stuff with that, but it's true. And like the more we can really take responsibility for our inner world, our emotional world, the freer we're going to be to make decisions that are really based in our like clear, wholehearted decisions, grounded in our sense of safety, grounded in the belief that the world is a friendly place, grounded in the positive impact that we want to make, et cetera.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of my mentors, Julian Adler, years ago told me about this concept of the drama triangle. And there was this great time. So I was sharing this in a talk last year in DC. And the drama triangle is essentially the hero, the victim, and the perpetrator. It's kind of like that old cartoon Rocky and Bullwinkle, where you have Snidely Whiplash, who's the devilish fiend, who's always tying Nell, who's the victim, to the train tracks. And then Dudley Do-Right has to come in and save the day. But yet what you don't realize is that's actually our day-to-day lives, and that we're always experiencing hero, victim, perpetrator, especially in the workplace. And this gentleman, there was an audience of about 300 people. And I said, okay, everybody share a little bit about where you might have been the victim, the hero, or the perpetrator. And this really courageous man raised his hand when I asked for people from groups to share. And he shared with the whole group. He said, Jen, I can actually see recently where I was the hero, the victim, and the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. And he gave this amazing example. He said, you know, a couple weeks ago on a Friday, he ran a law firm, and he said, you know, I realized that at the 11th hour, we could save the law firm I worked for about $700 or $800. So I went to the managing partner and I said, here's my proposal. I think I can, if we switch to this other vendor, save us $800. Well, in that moment, he was trying to be the hero because he was trying to save the firm money. But then at the same time, he became the victim because he had to stay there till midnight that night to get through the contract to get this new vendor onboarded. And then he was the perpetrator because he did that to himself. And the moment that we see that, that's the only thing that gets us out of the drama triangle, is this concept of accountability. The moment, like you just said earlier, Julie, is that the moment you're able to see how you might be accountable for the situation that you're blaming another person for, your work situation, et cetera, then you get your power back.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I think that's such a fantastic example. And I see this all the time, not so, well, sometimes with the blame thing, but the way that I see this show up for people that in my world is when they're really stuck trying to, you know, find a job that makes them happy, and they don't even actually know, they don't have the confidence to even commit to a job because they don't actually know what's going to make them happy. There's a whole pattern that they're stuck in that is about just that. It's like they're looking outside themselves for an answer when the paradigm for creating real progress is completely different than that. So I can describe this pattern that they get into. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, please.
Does that
I would
sound
love
good?
To know more about
okay.
it.
Okay. So The pattern, there's two patterns I'll describe. So the first one is the one that keeps you stuck. It's like the permanently stuck pattern. And this is one that comes naturally to us as humans, right? Like it's kind of like our default. And just with a few tweaks, we can actually shift the paradigm, just like what you're talking about. So, you know, when you are dreaming about change in your life, like a job change or some other kind of life change, and you've got that longing for something different, like I said before, it's vulnerable. So the first stage you're going to be in is vulnerability. And then you're going to have that primal uh-oh, which is when your brain comes in and makes up reasons to shut it down. But also what I find happens in that uh-oh is actually like my clients, you know, they're really good people and they don't want to do anybody wrong. So like, they don't want to embarrass themselves. They don't want to fail. They don't want to fail and lose money that they could be giving to their family. There's always all these ways that they actually want to be responsible, but the way they go about doing it without thinking about it is they enter the second stage, which is looking outside of themselves for answers. And so it's like, okay, I need a change. I'm suffering. I hate my job. I'm going to look at personality tests. I'm going to comb the job listings, you know, and I'm going to hope that that tells me the job that I want. You know, the personality tests are going to tell me who I am, and I'm going to ask my friends what they think, and they're going to tell me. So there's this expectation that if I just give the authority out there, if out there is like, if I have a belief that somebody else is kind of in charge of this, or somebody else has this say of what job I should do and what's going to be a guarantee, then you'll go and you'll look to that. But that really gets us into trouble because it brings us out of ourselves and out of our connection with ourselves. Like we've just given away our power and now we're waiting for clarity, but we're not feeling clarity when we get the answers. So the four states we get in is like, we discover all that we don't know. And so we have possibilities in front of us, but we have no idea how we feel about those possibilities. And that makes it impossible to take action. And it also cuts down hope because we're looking ahead. We're sort of like on the cliff, looking at how we're going to leap to the next cliff. And we're like, I don't buy it. Like, I don't believe, I'm not feeling the clarity or the enthusiasm or the conviction. I guess I just kind of don't deserve this. Or I guess other people get to have this, but I don't. And maybe I'll just never be happy at work. And so they shut the whole thing down. But if you switch just a couple things in that process, you're going to take yourself to a completely different place. So rather than sort of like looking outside you, like, will you tell me who I am? Will you tell me what a guarantee is? Will you tell me what a great direction is? Instead, you know, you've got that longing. The first stage is vulnerability. You're going to take the Brené Brown approach and say, okay, vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity and change. And so instead of interpreting it as something's wrong, I'm about to fail, you're going to say something's happening. Something important is happening. That's why I'm feeling this way. So I'm going to get curious about it and I'm going to care for this place and stay here as I discover what's really happening. And then that causes you to look inside for answers instead of looking outside. And so when you look inside for all those answers, you're asking yourself, okay, well, what does this mean? What's important about the thing that I'm longing for? What do I know about myself when it comes to this? Like, what can I count on when it comes to myself? What is my purpose in life? Can I apply that to this job? Is this a good alignment for me? And every time you go inside and you ask yourself those questions and you come up with the answers, you're getting answers for one, but you're emotionally connecting to yourself in the process. So you're getting, you know, like when I read the book on leadership and I had that real visceral reaction to it, I just knew that that was my path. So I had the confidence to fork over the money to do my first coaching program. I wasn't in fear that this was maybe the wrong path. I don't know. Because I had that, I already had proof in my experience that there's something about this that lights me up. So I'm going to move toward it. So when that happens, instead of discovering all that you don't know, you actually discover all that you do know. And if you just take a little bit of time, like you're saying, you can discover all the strengths that you have that can be applied to creating this new opportunity for yourself. You can discover all the reasons why it is possible you can discover what your purpose is and what you have to bring and what a great candidate you would be. Like all of these things that help us to build our confidence and clarity. And when that happens, we naturally decide that it's possible because we feel it's possible. It's like we feel it in our bones. And then I find that once people are there, they just start taking action. And then they start to create it.
I think you're so right. I think it's a culmination of several things. It's about the pausing. It's about connecting to your inner self. And it, like you said, it's about trusting yourself. And this concept that I'd love to throw out there of certainty, of when we have certainty, like there's this great manifestation app that I use. And the funny thing about it is, I think half of the efficacy of this, it's called How to Manifest Anything on YouTube that you can listen to for 11 minutes a day. And I tell people all the time, you will be astounded, absolutely boggled by what you could create and what you can manifest. But I think it's a double-edged sword because on the one hand, first you have to realize that you deserve it and that you're worth it. I was just mentoring somebody recently who said, gosh, you know, Jen, it's just tough and I'm just feeling a little bit down. And I said, you know, start with just telling yourself that you love yourself in the mirror. I remember about 3 years ago, I had Brandon Maslin on the show, and he was talking about a friend of his who was in the same bathroom as Bill Clinton before he was preparing for a speech. And Bill would tell himself before every speech, you're the man, Bill, you got this. You're going to nail it. They're going to fall in love with you. And, you know, you can laugh and whatever you think about Bill's politics, good or bad, you know, it's more about that pushing yourself out that we're all human, whether you hold one of the highest offices in the country, or if, you know, you're just starting off your career, we all have insecurities, but part of it is learning to trust yourself. So first part is being ready and willing to realize that you deserve everything that you could ever want more. And then the second thing is having certainty. I think that we get kind of put off. We go through one little obstacle and then, you know, we might not get the call back right away on the first resume that we submit somewhere. And so we say, oh gosh, I'm really not meant to be a manager. That one company didn't respond to me. Yet somebody else out there is going to go apply to 100 more of the same jobs until they get one yes, because they have certainty in their heart or in their mind, whatever you would want to call it, that that job is the right job for them. And they're willing to do whatever it takes. And they're willing to match their desire with action to fulfill it.
That's right. Yeah, beautiful. And I think also what you're speaking to is commitment. Because there's the certainty, the holding the certain vision in your heart. I declare now this is possible. I'm going to make this happen, or I'm going to choose to believe that this will happen. And then there's the commitment of doing what it takes to keep creating it, to participate with the world, to build it, just like you would build a house.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing to throw out there too is to have conversations with people about it. You know, a lot of people, they get so afraid. They're so tentative about telling anybody, oh gosh, no, I'm just not fulfilling my life purpose, because people feel depressed or they feel embarrassed or ashamed about it. And in reality, the more you talk about what you want to create, so instead of saying, gosh, life really sucks, I have a job I hate, you can instead say, you know what, I don't know what it looks like, but by December 31st, 2019, I'm going to have a job paying me $100,000 or more within 5 miles of my house doing what I love. I have no idea how that's going to show up, but that's my commitment. And every person you talk to have that conversation brings it up to a whole other level of accountability in what you could create.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. So I want to just mention that the reason why I chuckled at your Bill Clinton story is because I totally did the same thing before this interview.
Oh, that's amazing.
You
I
know?
Love it.
Yeah. Because like this is my growth edge, is showing up and talking to you on a radio show. And it's like I have to be willing to, not only do I have to be willing to do it, but like I want to meet my own growth edge because I want to create what I want to create. So, and it's my responsibility to do that, you know? So I love that you shared that story.
Yeah. And I'll be very frank with you. Ever since Brandon Maslin shared that story with me, I think that show, if anybody wants to go back and find it in the archives, was in August of 2018, maybe around the 14th. But ever since that show, 2 or 3 years ago, I've literally done that same technique too. Prior to any speaking engagement, prior to any radio show or TV appearance I do the same thing. Because guess what? Is it going to hurt? No. And I tell job seekers to do the same darn thing before they go into an interview.
Yeah. And you know, we all have wounds that sort of get in the way when we're trying to do something that we want. And that's really an opportunity. It's a growth opportunity every time something like that shows up, right? So if we have anxiety, then it's an opportunity to sort of build so much more love or self-love in our lives to take care of that anxiety. You know, whatever it is, whatever kind of emotional hurdle that comes up, it might appear like it's a barrier, but actually it's there. It is absolutely there for us. It's like planted before us so that we can use it to grow in the way that we want to grow, to create what we want to create. I feel like if you know, find that when you look at it that way, it's a total reframe that's much more liberating and much more helpful.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. It's if you tell yourself you can't, you're right. And if you tell yourself you can, you're right. It's all about the perspective through which we view things.
Yeah.
So absolutely. It's, you know, we could obviously talk for hours and hours about this, Julie, but were there any other points or anything else that you wanted our listeners to walk away from today's show with, or any salient points that we didn't get a chance to cover?
Let's see. Well, you know, the biggest takeaway, I think, is I'm going to build on what you said, is, you know, generally speaking, you want to take care of the process, whatever process you're in, whatever you're trying to create, you want to slow down and take responsibility for caring for it. So that means investing in yourself. And if you need time to do the inner work, to ask yourself those questions or to get help to do that, then you're worth it. You know, and it's not an opportunity that you want to shut down. So I would leave listeners with just that very general piece of advice. And don't be afraid to get help too. There's a lot of resources out there that, you know, that can help move you along, that can help give you the pieces of information that you're missing, or help to have you understand where you're holding yourself back. So if you really want freedom and you really want to be able to create what you want, and you have this feeling like, I'm ready to take responsibility, like I want to learn how to do that, reach out to people, go online, read books, just, you know, lean into any resources that you have access to.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And to piggyback on last week's show with Rhonda Vetteri, we were talking about finding a mentor. I think having either a buddy, you could have a buddy, an accountability buddy, you could find somebody who you could ask to mentor you, maybe somebody you respect. As somebody, I personally mentor several people in my life, and it's such an honor and a privilege to be able to give back in that sort of a way. So I think a lot of people are apprehensive about asking for help, when in reality, by not asking for help, you're depriving people of the opportunity to contribute and to pay it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of connection to be had in asking for help. And it takes humility to ask for help, too.
Oh, absolutely. Because you can't, otherwise it's like you think you know it all. And I remember in the first many years of my career, I thought I knew everything. And my God, my head was so far out my butthole. we'll make sure we don't have to put, there's some, when we have certain words on the show, we have to say this show is for mature audiences only. So for this show, we will say butthole. But my head was so far up there that I thought I knew everything. And it took me well into my early 30s to realize that I knew so little, and that the more I could be in the good graces of people much smarter than me who could help mentor me, the further my career grew.
Yeah. And I would say also, if you find yourself really reluctant to ask for help, then that's an indication that you're caught in like an overcoming story. So you're caught in struggle, and you're creating more struggle for yourself. And so just by, you know, loosening up and asking for help and just being open to that can kind of take you out of the kind of mindset that you're in, where you feel like you have to do everything yourself and you have to do everything right and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, tell me, I know you've written a book. Where can people find information about your book or about your programs?
Yeah. So my book is called Just Give Me Meaningful Work, Escape Your Exhausting Job and Start Making a Difference. It's available on all major digital booksellers, and it's about $13 to $16. But if you don't mind reading a PDF copy, I can offer you that. So your listeners can go to meaningfulworkthebook.com. and download that for free. And my website is julieboyercoaching.com. If you want to find out more about my programs, I've got a program called Jumpstart to Loving Your Job Again, which I'm happy to talk to anybody about. And so I'll leave you with that.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
I should say that, Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Go right ahead. What were we going to say?
I didn't really describe the book. The book is a guide to creating a change, just like the one that we're talking about. So it's a great place to start. It's sort of like a step-by-step guide.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, again, if you're looking to make a change out there and to maybe shake things up and figure out what you're passionate about, definitely check out Julie's book. And if you missed any portion of today's show, please go to the latalkradio.com website under the Get Yourself the Job page. At the bottom of that page, you can find an archive for all of the last 3 years of our shows, including the one I referenced on Brandon Maslin or any other shows that might interest you. And today's show should be available within an hour after the show for download in the archive section. Or if you're more of a fan of podcasts and iTunes, you can also download the show later in the week on iTunes and subscribe and listen at your leisure to any other shows that we offer on there as well from the past. So thank you so much to everybody who tuned in today, and we look forward to having you join us again next week at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we'll be talking about hustling and how to be effective at hustling to land your dream job.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.